God, Apoms. It's that time again. Stop what you're doing and listen to the Warrington Wolves podcast. Yes, it's time for the boys to talk shite again. It's time for What Would Brian Bruce Say? No. What Would Ryan Bogan Say? No. What Would Greg Inglis Say? Yes. Fuck it. What Would Greg Inglis Say? Well, let's be honest. There's fuck all else to talk about.
Greg Inglis. Greg Inglis. Greg Inglis.
Coming up, alongside an easing of restrictions in this week's podcast, Daniel picks his pick of our speedsters and finishers, as we too take a look at Wires wingers with some surprising statistics. Sam carefully inserts his cap, no doubt with a caveat. We take a look at the second row merry-go-round. There's our 70-page review of what Ando had to say. Ben Curry invites six guests over to feast on his habanero pepper, along with the player that couldn't hide from a 60-quid cycling fine. This is What Would Brian Bevan Say? Hello, I'm Rob London, and in a week where I was made redundant, I was also given a big fat check that I'm seriously considering putting in a takeover bid for Runcorn Highfield. But less of that, where are my two still gainfully employed podcasters? Firstly, a man that's diddled more books than Ken Dodd's accountant. Yes, the podcast's very own statistical tickling stick, which if you tickle him for long enough with, leads to his eventual erection of his diddy man. Welcoming Sam Bucktooth Sankey.
Hello, Rob. I'm tickled pink to be here and share some of the happiness that...
Happiness.
That's the one. But how about you, mate?
I'm very well, mate. I'm very well. I'm just trying to duck and dive my way of not getting another job for a while. The missus is working from home, so she's keen to get me back out there. But you just have to wait and see what happens, eh? And also, a production worker that's bluffed his way into senior management, thus becoming the major breadwinner so we can all be kept in jam butties from the Jambutty Mine. It's Dennis Naughty Ashwaywell.
Okay. Did you hear about the shrimp that went to the prawn cocktail party? I don't know why I'm doing it in a Welsh accent.
Why are you doing it like Frank Carson?
I know. Anyway.
Was he in Risley Remand Centre? Was he?
I don't know. No. Tax evasion.
He wasn't in Risley Prison.
He was in one for a while, wasn't he? While he was waiting trial.
His tickle sticks resembled a sex symbol, but I think that's a fallacy.
Oh, God.
No, come on, keep up. That was one of his jokes.
How is your tickling stick, Dennis?
Not too bad. Still, quite fluffy.
Very good. So we all tickle pink. We've had a good week.
It's gone bloody cold. Where's this rain come from? I've been getting used to proper European Mediterranean climate. Now it's been pissing down for 3 days.
Well, it looks like you've got the right jersey on for this climate, Sam, because we should all explain tonight that Sam is wearing the Warrington Wolves away top with greenalls on the front that just recently won the Warrington vote. Is that your favourite top, Sam?
From when I started watching, yes.
Is it?
Yeah. If I... Out of the ones they put on the thing, never you mind. Out of the ones they put on the vote, yes, this is my favourite. If I had an all-time favourite, it'd be an all-white kit with either a primrose and blue V and Vladivar or a hoop, primrose and blue hoop and Spartomatic.
Yeah. Is it a coincidence that the red, green and white jersey were the main colours of both jerseys in the final and happened to be the colours of South Sydney Rabbitohs to keep Greg Inglis happy?
Just to calm him down.
I don't think there's a coincidence in that at all. I think there's some market research going on by Warrington Wolves of what next year's away kit.
Well, it'd be great to see Greenalls back.
Now, you also, Sam, got that same jersey in the home kit as well, mate, didn't you? But it must have been a bit of manufacturing issues at the time.
Mm. Yeah, I've got the same size for both. But this one, it comes down past my elbows and the other one fits nice and snug. And yet, supposedly, they both are large.
And obviously, Cullen designed the logo there. Perhaps, you know, his meticulous sort of, you know, work ethic didn't really run into the sizing of these shirts.
No, I think he probably thought, put some barbed wire around that badge for the wire. Right, that's my input done. I'm off the pub. Mm. That's probably what he did.
The one thing you don't want on a shirt, and that it is on that shirt, is the collar. I mean, you can get grabbed by that collar. Did they have collars? Did the players have collars as well?
Oh, no. Listen, when you're wearing it and you're not a rugby player, of course you want a collar.
So you can get in the pubs.
Fair enough. Now, Daniel is far too young to remember most of Wise Wingers, the likes of Brian Bevan, Ray Fisher, Dennis Curling, Phil Ford, Mark Foster, Hussein Mbarki, Kevin Meadows, Neil Kenyon, Desi Drummond, Matty Kimathi, even Rob Smythe. Although he probably is old enough to remember Matty Russell. How can we forget? Here's Daniel with his take on his best two Wolves wingers he's watched during the Super League era, along with the most entertaining winger thrown in two.
This week, my topic of conversation is the wide boys at Warrington. Now, take that to mean what you will, but I'm going to talk about the wingers that we've had over the years, and I'm going to pick what my dream two wingers would be if I was picking a Warrington team. Now, I've kept this to the period that I've watched rugby league and watched Warrington, which is kind of mid-2000s to present, so I've got around a 15-year radius to work with. So my first pick, automatic, first choice, no doubt, is Joel Monaghan, who signed in 2011 and stayed 4 years before leaving in 2015. And he left the club with a try-scoring rate of 145 tries in 145 matches, which is just impeccable, even for a winger. That's absolutely world-class standard. I love Monaghan. Even though he wasn't particularly the quickest player in the world, his finishing ability was remarkable, his positional awareness. He was just an outstanding winger who scored in a lot of big games for his Challenge Cup finals, grand finals. And obviously we didn't win the grand final in his time at the club, but what a player Monaghan was, he and his brother Michael. I loved watching Joel because he had such ability about him and such an ability to score. With him, you always felt like you could score tries. He was just a natural try scorer, one of my all-time favourite players at the club. And partnering Joel Monaghan, my dream Warrington wingers, is Chris Riley, who we actually had on the podcast a couple of shows ago. So Chris Riley, 2005-14, was quite a long spell at the club and got 119 tries in 182 appearances for the club, which again is a very, very good try scoring rate. Particularly when you consider that in his last couple of years he didn't play as much as he had done previously. But again, you know, Riley, excellent player. I also love the way that he spoke on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. If you haven't heard that episode, I would recommend it because there's a lot of interesting things in there from his time at the club. I felt harsh not picking Josh Charnley because I think Charnley has a lot about him in terms of the defensive side of the game, which is becoming more important, more and more important for wingers in the modern era of rugby league. You know, what can you do in the sets near your line, taking the ball away from your own line, getting yardage up, and Charnley is outstanding at that. He's also pretty good defensively. But I, you know, a winger's primary job is to score, and Riley and Monaghan were the two I picked for that reason. I was also asked to think of who's the most entertaining winger I've seen at the club. Now, someone who's a little bit hard done by not to even get a mention in the first category is Tom Lynham, but he's surely one of the most entertaining we've had at the club, as well as being an excellent winger. I could listen to this guy talk all day, whether it's about the famous Cynthia or the Declan Patton snitch conversation or calling Hull a ghetto town. He's just got such a great sense of humour, and the weird and wonderful Tom Lynham, definitely one of the most entertaining players and wingers that we've had at the club. But in terms of on-pitch antics, Kevin Penny is right up there. You know, some of his finishes, that spectacular one against Lee Centurions, I think it was, in the Challenge Cup, you know, those were his brilliant finishes. I loved watching the way he finished, in the same way that someone like Tommy Makinson or Tom Johnston does today. Lynham's got a bit of ability for that as well. He's won against Castleford earlier this season. That was a great dive for the corner. So those are my selections of Warrington wingers through the years.
The Dennis, in agreement with young Daniel there on his two picks?
I like Daniel. He didn't mention Brian Bevan.
Well, he did say a caveat at the start, mate. Yeah. He did say the only ones he's actually watched. If you'd listened to the soundbite, you would have known that.
Apologies to Daniel there. Oh, God, I feel really guilty now. Yes, so his two players. No, I don't agree with... Do I? Yes, I agree with Monaghan. I think he is the probably standout player of the last few years, of his era anyway, certainly. Yeah. Yeah. So I think definitely with that one. Riley, well, we've had him on the show.
Have we?
We have had him in there, have we? Haven't we?
Don't remember now. Oh, yes, we did. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, he was, as we said, he was like a steady cart horse, you know, in terms of how he fitted into the team. So, yeah, it's not bad. I probably would have exchanged him out for Desi Drummond.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, got you. Yeah, actually, thinking about it, I would have gone with... And look, he was a bit of a legend at the club. He couldn't catch for toffee, and that was Des Drummond. I always remember my dad saying, Desi Drummond is great when he's actually caught the ball. But the amount of balls they threw to Desi that he used to drop. But once he had it, he was away. Sam's shaking his head on this. So I'd have gone for Desi Drummond and Phil Ford. They would have been my two picks. Mm. Sam? Mm.
Well, I did a little bit of digging, and my history goes... Well, our history goes back a little bit further than Daniel. Yeah, so...
Another one under the patio.
I thought we'd look at predominantly Super League wingers to begin with, and then we'll look at Desi Drummond, Mark Foster, and, of course, Brian Bevan. So, Joel Monaghan, 156 games in Super League, 137 tries. That's a try every 91 minutes.
Yeah.
And Chris Riley, as we said, in that period, 08 to 13... He scored 143 games, 99 tries. But in total, his total career was a try every 124 minutes. Mm-hmm. If you want to compare them to Matty Russell, who you mentioned in your intro, 88 mm-hmm. games, 25 tries, or a try every 281 minutes.
Gee.
That's nearly a prop forwards rate. But really, what you've got to look at is Monaghan and Chris Hicks every 103 minutes. But if you go back further, Des Drummond was only scoring one try every three games.
Yeah, but I get where you... That's the stat version. I think I picked Des Drummond because of the... You know, you get that sort of like tingling feeling when he's about to get the ball and he...
No.
Possibly, or putting in a tackle or something.
That's sexual, you know? Dennis.
The two standouts in history. First of all, Martin Afaya, or Offia, if you will, for the Southern people, in Super League, scored 424 tries at one try every 75 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the great Brian Bevan scored 740 tries, one every 69 minutes.
Mm.
One every 69 minutes. Bloody amazing.
Yeah.
So go on, Rob, give us your...
Well, the way I look at it is let me just go through, right? Who are you picking here, right? I'll give you seven wingers, right? But I'll call them player one down to player seven, okay?
Okay.
So player one scores every 104 minutes. Player two, every 103 minutes. Player three, every 91 minutes. Player four, every 281 minutes. Player five, every 120 minutes. Player six, every 128 minutes. And player seven, every 115 minutes. Which players are you going for?
I'm going for the one with the shortest, i.e. Joel Monaghan in the case...
No, I didn't say his name was Joel Monaghan. I said his name was player three. What I'm saying here is that if you look at that and just basically just strip them bare of their characters and what they look like and what their names are, the two that clearly stand out are players three and seven, which are Joel Monaghan and Chris Riley, which are the two that Daniel's picked. It's only when you start bringing the charisma in and what we know about them and that sizzle rather than their sausages that you start pulling in Chris Hicks and you start pulling in Josh Charnley.
But you do have to consider all around it. For example, Martin Afaya, brilliant strike rate, But if he was in that team that we were talking about last week in 2001, he'd have scored nothing. It was only because he was in a great Wigan team.
You're not blaming Ando here, are you?
I don't know about that, mate. He scored enough playing for St George. And, you know, the defences in the NRL were pretty tight. And St George was shit out at the time.
He's still very good, but he would have been 10 minutes more on his average.
Yeah.
So
you've
got to look at all-round game. So for me, the ones I've seen, I'd have Monaghan and Hicks because of their strength, their ability in the air, the defensive ability. They're the two I'd have.
Well, what about how much you're paying for each try? Count how many tries they've scored and divide it into their salary. And I expect Joe Monaghan's tries are quite expensive.
Suddenly Chris Riley comes worth every single penny, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. So what we're saying is that basically every try that Joe Monaghan scored was probably about 500 quid. And every try that Chris Riley scored was probably about 5 quid.
Maybe not quite that diversion, but diversions.
What did we pay Brian Bevan in? Woodbines?
40 fags.
Dennis, you fancy yourself as a winger?
You always used to
be a bit of a coward. You'd get on the wing, didn't you, when you were supposed to be playing prop, if I remember rightly, at college. You were always out on the wing going, I'm just having another drink.
No, I was up in the middle. I was the one who got stiff-armed and was put out for half the match after someone who was the shortest player on the pitch decided to tackle me around the chin.
So, dear. Right, okay. So,
just before you go on, one thing I did look at. You text yesterday to say Ryan Hall has finally got a game because of the amount of injuries.
There we go. It's going to come to Ryan Hall's defence now.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. Do you know in that period where Chris Riley was our first choice, 2008 to 2013, he had a better strike rate than Ryan Hall has at Leeds.
There we go. But take the names away. Call Chris Riley player one and Ryan Hall player two. And all of a sudden, player one looks wonderful.
So which players are you picking, Rob? You've not answered the question.
I have the question. My two wingers would be purely on entertainment. I don't enjoy wingers scurrying from acting
half. You don't enjoy all that scoring, do you?
I don't enjoy watching Josh Charnley and Tom Lynham being used as battering rams. I like to be lifted off my seat when a winger gets the ball, even if he does make a few mistakes. So the two I would go for, and it's not because they're the best two wingers, but entertainment value, I'd put Desi Drummond on one wing just because every time he touched the ball, something was going to happen. And I'd put Phil Ford on the other for being such a marvellous stepper. Brilliant player. And also the fact that allegedly Bob Eccles' car got nicked by him. So, you know, they'd be the two that I'd go for. Yes. Okay, time for Curry of the Week. Sam Dennis, you both reluctantly participated in this last time. It's pretty clear you're sick of curry and you just both want a Chinese. Can I offer you two to both come and dine with me?
I actually had beef and black bean tonight, so I certainly didn't want a curry tonight. I went for the Chinese tonight. Ooh. And there's still no news on Ben. He's back on Twitter. He had a couple of weeks off Twitter where he's very quiet. And he's back on Twitter. And the Wigan fans on their board are still thinking he's going to them.
Well, we'll come on to that in a second. Dennis, you got any dishes for him?
There's a lot going on with Mr. Curry at the moment, isn't there? Yeah. I think...
Nothing, have you? Nothing whatsoever. I did notice he's got a bit of a dilemma.
Did you notice what I did there?
What did you do?
My breath was took away because actually one of the hottest chilies you can get is a Scotch bonnet. Oh. And actually that is one of the main components of a Jamaican curry.
Well, it's funny you should say that, Dennis, because he had a dilemma this week on social media. And that was which six people he was going to invite around first for a meal once this social distancing's been sort of alleviated a bit. And of course... the Caribbean, the Jamaicans, they all love to celebrate a festival. So this week's Ben Curry Curry of the Week is a Jamaican curry.
And today's curry dish is...
the curry chicken. And the rice and peas came out very beautiful.
like this one. Has anyone got a spliff?
Right, to be serious for a second, boys, we've had a little bit of inside information about the merry-go-round that's going on with the four second rowers, one of them being Mr. Benjamin Curry. We understand that the agents are very busy at the moment offering their candidates up for who they should sign the clubs. The four players are McMeekin, Bateman, Curry and Josh Jones. Sam, where are we at with this? I mean, do you think it's just a case that Ben will stay at Warrington, that Bateman will stay in the NRL, Jones at Hull, McMeekin will stay put? What do you think?
Well, I've nailed my colours to the mast, haven't I? I'm a big Ben Curry fan and I'd like him to stay at the right price. But if he was to go, it would start a domino effect, wouldn't it? We've been linked with McMeekin, we've been linked with Josh Jones, and frankly, if we started the next proper season with them two as my back rowers, I wouldn't be disappointed.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, I mentioned the word dilemma in Ben Curry wanting to bring six people round to his house for dinner. It is a dilemma. We're just not quite sure where we are with this.
No. I think about this is that Bateman aside, but and probably Josh Jones aside, but when you look at McMeekin and Curry, is that they've almost plateaued in their career, if you like. And I think, you know, both of them aren't playing to the full potential. And maybe a change is better for them both. So
maybe
the merry-go-round needs to be given a little push.
They all come with a warning, Sam. I mean, if we go through them. So Ben Curry, clearly on an outstanding salary at the moment, based on it was signed prior to those knee issues.
Yes.
But, yeah. You know, you put him down there on paper and you're making a decision on what you want to pay him. It's clear Warrington are not going to pay him as much as he's been on. And that's probably because of that knee. So that's Ben Curry. Bateman's shoulder, he's had one operation on it. He's had all his time off during lockdown. He's not ready to go. I noticed last night on social media, he's had another operation on the shoulder. We spoke about him almost being too brave. The fact that he just takes everyone on with this such, you know, forcefulness. And he's possibly not quite big enough to take on the big boys. And now his body's starting to break down a bit. So there's a question mark there. That $800,000 that the Bulldogs were offering him may not be on the table anymore, working on the assumption they could be getting someone with a crook shoulder. McMeekin's form's died away since he sort of came to prominence. And then we've got Josh Jones that maybe there's a few issues on. Does he settle wherever he goes to? So you've got to calculate, surely, the salaries in sort of comparison to what these guys are worth now.
Yeah, Jones, yes, don't know him other than what I see on TV, but yeah, St. Helens and Salford, then Hull, fairly quick moves, aren't they? And if he did come to us, that'd be a fourth move in 6 years, maybe.
Right. Yeah. So we've got damaged goods a little bit, haven't we?
Is it that, or does he just want to? Has he gone to Hull and he wants to come back over? I mean, last I heard, last I heard, he was going to stay at Hull.
Yeah, so we'll sort of go on to what we've been told, and this is sort of from people in the know.
Are we not in the know?
No. Curry has turned down a contract at Warrington and has been offered a 3-year contract at Wigan. Bateman has been offered about $800,000 at the Bulldogs, of which Wigan have offered him half that amount of money to come back and play at Wigan but be close to his daughter. McMeekin is still in talks with Warrington. That is still continuing. And Josh Jones has made his peace with Hull. I guess, as Sam said at the start of all this, it comes down to, will it be a snowballing effect? If Curry moves, will that then start this sort of domino effect of where they'll all end up?
Well, if Ben Curry does go from Warrington, we're then missing both Curry and Ben Murdoch in the cellar. So yeah. we need one, at least one big second row signing, don't we?
Yeah.
At least.
I can't believe, would Castleford want to let McMeekin go? I mean,
well, they wouldn't want to, but Castleford punch above the weight all the time, don't they?
Is he off contract?
You don't know what Castleford's money situation is like. We've pinched Clark from there a couple of years ago. Leeds have pinched the halfback from him.
All right, Dennis, well, I'll give it to you. Which one do you want? Out of those four, which one would you like to see in the Warrington away green and red top next year?
McMeekin, I think.
McMeekin. Sam?
Yes. Yeah.
I'd like Curry to stay.
You're going to stick, are you? I'll go
Bellingham. Well, on
any of the four.
I just don't think there's any chance. If he's coming back, he's going to Wigan, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't think he'll come back. I think money will talk and he'll end up probably at the Bulldogs or somewhere.
He's got a dodgy shoulder. Why would you want him back?
Well, this is it. This is exactly what we're talking about. When it comes down to looking how much you're willing to pay these guys, straight away you're coming up with, he's got a dodgy shoulder.
Yeah. I think Curry's proved himself on his knee. What he's not quite got or doesn't seem to have is that little bit of explosive pace that he used to have.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, we wish them all the best, all four, and it'll be interesting to see where they go, eh, lads?
Hmm.
Okay, listeners of a certain age may be interested in our Steve Anderson episode last week. Sam Dennis, having had time to reflect on the recording and Ando's 70-page coaching manual he sent us for his 5-year plan at Wilderspool. What did you make of it, Dennis? Oh, don't pick it up. You're going to hurt your back picking that 70-page document up.
You know, being that I read a lot for my work, the 48-page document, very technical on rugby league. I can't imagine how a rugby league player who just basically wants to get out on the pitch and play rugby would be in a position where he could be, you know, taught a lot of this stuff. It's not something that's going to, you know, be easily transferable.
No, but he put it in place to give the club structure, didn't he? He was basically writing a coaching manual for them that they could always refer to if need be. I don't think that's what he was doing day to day with the team. I thought, Sam, that based on what we heard from Ando, his biggest mistake, and he opened up to this, was he didn't really ask the right questions at the interview, or he wasn't told the right answers. And on the back of that, as Lee Braze said, the squad just wasn't good enough. It was our poorest squad we've probably had in 30 years.
Yeah. I actually found our discussion with him, and what the listeners to the pod won't know is we probably spoke half an hour before and another good half hour after. I found the discussion really, really informative.
You found his tickling stick?
Yeah. He's meticulous in his preparation. He shows that by the level of detail he goes into and his thing. He admitted his mistakes. But on reflection, it was his first job, wasn't it, as the main man. If he'd have come to a stable club and tried to overlay his ideas on a stable club, he could have taken us forward. But we weren't. We were a club like a box of frogs at the time, always moving, not got a clue. And really, he perhaps had an impossible job. I mean, it showed that when we realised in August of that last year, we had just 7 players signed for the following year.
Yeah, it was crazy, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think he had a chance from the start.
No.
Can I just clarify, are we getting a percentage for his book? Rob,
are you on a percentage, Rob? No, I don't want to... just carry on, lads. No, not getting a percentage for the book at all.
Carry on. What's happened to you?
No, nothing. No.
You froze. You definitely froze.
Look, maybe I might be getting a percentage for the book, but now you've brought it up. We'll have a discussion after. Jesus Christ, got that one through.
I'm not promoting it anymore.
I did a bit of digging on the Anderson season where we almost went down. And I was quite surprised in looking through the results as to where we all stood in this and why we didn't go down. And I've come up with a reason why we didn't go down. I'll just go through that. Anderson was in charge of 6 games. He was actually in charge for 8. There was 2 Challenge Cup games as well that were played prior to the season started. He won 1 and he lost 1. But in Super League, he was in 6 games. He had a 16.66% winning ratio. He won 1 and he lost 5. Plange then takes over with presumed Derbyshire in the background as well. He's in charge for 16 games. He wins only 3 and loses 13 with a ratio of 18.75%. And then Cullen comes in for the last 6 games, winning 2 games and losing 4 with a 33.33% average. If you look at the 2 teams that Cullen beat, he beat Castleford, which was an excellent win. Castleford gone on a real roll of results. They'd won about 7 on the trot prior to Cullen's side taking them on. But he also beat Halifax. That was his other win. Looking at Halifax's last 22 games of that season, they only won 4 games. They beat Salford twice. They beat Wakefield and they beat Warrington. Okay, so Halifax were there for the taking. Wakefield sold Westwood and Wood to Warrington.
That was the reason. For me, that was the killer.
They sold them to Warrington on the 5th of June. How many games do you think Wakefield won out of their next 15 games after that? They lost those two players. They didn't win one.
Oof.
They lose all 15 games. And then when the season's already finished, on the last day of the season, they beat Warrington and Cullen's men 50 points to 10. But by then, the season was over. Now, it's all very well saying Wakefield were the reason that, you know, possibly we stayed up and that was the reason why. But the real reason was because it was Salford that were relegated that year. Salford lost 11 of their last 12 games. The only game they won was against Warrington and Cullen when they beat Wyre. So it was Salford that went down and Wakefield were in second from bottom and we were third. But looking at that, the discrepancy between top and bottom, you've got a team at the top with 46 points, and I think I can't remember how many it was with Salford, but such a diversity in points across the league that we don't get now.
You're basically saying there was four shit teams at the bottom and we were third least shit.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Is this, what are you doing, Dennis?
Is this a Cullen myth?
Oh dear. Well, we've put that one to bed, lads, basically.
Okay. But okay. Yeah, all credit for it. All credit to Ando for coming on. And he was really interesting to listen to.
You should probably read out some of the comments as well, actually, boys. Dennis, I mean, just going through that document, what were the main points that you've picked up and that you're now going to take into your business structure?
The first thing is that I'd use pictures. I would present everything with a PowerPoint presentation to make it easily sort of transferable to the audience. The other thing would be, I suppose, is to really increase the amount of time that I spent actually coaching. Because I think the summary of it is that Ando, as your friend's now called, is more akin to probably, a backroom sort of strategic position rather than the frontline coach. He definitely had the ideas. He was ahead of his time, but he's not the man to implement it, is probably what I would learn from that.
Dennis, you're very kind enough every week to do the Art Week for social media.
The Art Week?
The Art on Art Week for social media. Yes. Okay. I noticed your picture this week. You had Steve Anderson at the front with a nice paper of the Warrington Guardian on his lap. We had Steam Broomhead having a shit in the background. But he also spoke very highly of David Waite. You seem to have David Waite handcuffed to a radiator. You do realise it was Terry Waite that was handcuffed to a radiator.
I think I might have got it mixed up there. Yeah, but you know what? Yeah. The artwork over the past, I don't know how long, I don't think anybody appreciates the minute detail like that. So thank you for bringing that up.
That's all right, Dennis. No problem at all. We had lots of responses on this. Basically, everyone saying the same thing was they didn't really realise just how much shit Anderson was in before
he... Terry Waite.
We had nothing on the hostage situation. But I think the best one we received was from Darren Jones over in WA, who said, "Great podcast, guys. Mrs. Jones is wandering WA looking for Steve."
Ooh. Stalker nice. Alert.
Now, hopefully you've blocked it out of your memory, but if you haven't, you may remember last week Dennis brought us his Waywell assessment tool. Yes, a computer program that had about as much processing power as the 8-bit ZX Spectrum. A computer only fit for Jet Set Willy. So rather than Jet Set Willy, here's Cockhead Dick. It's Dennis's tackle bags.
Tackle bags.
You're joking. Not another one? Oh, for God's sake, I can't stand this.
Ah, dear. I'm just going to take a drink because this is
I'm pouring myself a big drink ready for this.
This is a special time for tackle bags. I just want to sort of, this is a really good point to mention about the NRL. The NRL started this week. And back in tackle bags number 31, which you all remember, I mentioned about having dummies in the crowd and noise pumped into the ground.
Oh, yeah.
Well, look what's happened in the NRL. I mean, apart from Hitler and Shipman, and a couple of others. I mean, it's been quite a success, hasn't it?
Are you going to sue him, Dennis? Are you going to sue him?
He's getting royalties. That's what he's getting.
Yeah. I've got about half a dollar from each one.
I tell you what, that crowd must be exhausted. They never stop. It never they've got someone on it like a dimmer switch, haven't they, going up and down.
Every time they get into the 20-metre zone, they turn it up a bit.
But it never stops. It's incessant.
It's better than listening to it just quiet, though.
Jumping on the back of tackle bags.
Yeah, but what they need is, they need that dimmer switch that's going up and down, and then they need someone with about six buttons in the background that can press one, and it goes, get him on side!
Rip his spleen out! Smash him!
Lads, calm down. I like that you're in a creative spirit. We're going to need this. Anyway, tackle bags last time, I aimed or looked at and introduced the Waywell Analytical Numerical Know-How software using the patented WANK algorithm. It was aimed at CAOs in rugby league to manage their rugby league businesses. Now, by entering sets of data in the WANK software, we can help with the strategic business decisions of a rugby league club. As we demonstrated last week with the directors, Mr. London and Mr. Sankey, the WANK algorithm quickly worked out the future actions that the club executives should take. Well, as you can imagine, I was inundated with opinion from quite a lot of fans, especially from the forum, who liked a WANK algorithm that had used innovative algorithms.
You having a fit?
You've not read this through before you've read it out, have you?
No, anyway, 74% of our fans agreed.
Bullshit.
They did. One from Free the Tadpoles. This has to go down. Dear. No, he's not, has he? Oh, shit. I brought the wrong one down. He's put, this has to go down as one of the best tackle bags ideas so far. Where can I get it? I want one. Where do I make a deposit? 17%. This one from Brian May's plug hole. If it's anything like some statistics, it probably has a virus. So
probably. He's right.
Other 8%. This is off Gilf.
Hang on, whoa. We've had 74%, 17%. Is this adding up? It doesn't seem to be adding up.
It doesn't matter.
There's 1% left.
That's in the matrix. GILF, what does GILF stand for? they put, I used something similar to your WANK algorithm. I made some anal beads from an abacus. Anyway, moving on. This week.
Yes, please.
This is good. This week, we're looking at the advanced art of lines in rugby. Now, we have running lines, dummy lines, defensive lines. Now, it's true.
Lines are coke.
No, we don't have any of that in our game. It's true that if you have some of well-planned plays with players following certain lines, your rugby team can exploit opportunities to score tries and win
line
games.
Ham.
We'll get there.
Oh, sorry.
You are being very creative, so it's great. Now, having lived in Glastonbury for a number of years and the relationship with Madame Boyd flourishing in recent years, I've been studying ley lines. It's well known that ley lines run beneath the earth, and the earth has a number of major channels of superhighways of power, which are made up from subtle electromagnetic energies, which are not visible to ordinary sight. These channels can be clairvoyantly sensed and feelings through the body or doused with hazel twigs or metal rods. So, yeah, Madden Boys told me all about this. There have been many, they are also been known as ad lines, given the power and the energy to those who step upon them. Yeah. So in conjunction with Madam Boyd, we're launching our new rugby league ley line tracker service, where we come out and plot out these lines on your rugby ground. It's called Dowsing on Neutral Ground.
Yeah, you are a big fucking dong, aren't you? Come on, carry on.
Oh, dear.
I didn't need to write that one down this week.
Right, okay. Oh, dear. I don't know where that was from. Anyway, we guarantee by plotting these lines out in your rugby pitch we will see an increase the play line productivity along the ad line.
Oh, what lines does Bob Ross draw?
Hey, come on, let's get back in the game here, right? So we guarantee that by...
We've never been in the game. Why have we been in this game? We're nothing to do with this.
This is good. We guarantee that by plotting these lines out in your rugby pitch, we will see an increase in play line productivity along the ad line. This is where the ad line is, where the lay lines run across the pitch. The lay lines can be used as a guide by coaches to play along certain lines on the pitch that will utilize this energy and power from the earth and feed into the corresponding ad lines.
These ley lines, what kind of crack do you get north of the river?
What? Anyway, our service will be, it takes about 3 hours to do. There might be some meditation and chanting. We charge £258.50 an hour plus expenses. Madam Boyd does like a shampoo and set before doing any dowsing. So if you think that's a great idea, as proven on Tackle Bags, it's always a very advanced thought process that can be useful, then write to us here at Wat Bevin on all the usual corresponding things.
Excellent.
Rob.
Yes.
Rob.
Yes.
This week, as a tribute to the shocking events in America, Spotify left an 8-minute silence. I think it was 8 minutes silent in all podcasts. Do you think you could do that just there?
Oh, that's a good point. Right, we'll take that out. Excellent. That's the best idea you've ever caught with, Sam. I like it. Dennis,
back next week.
Dennis, you've been edited from the podcast.
I'll be back next week. Don't worry.
Okay, it's become pretty clear Sam has given up providing us with any statistics. And yes, he even couldn't be asked enlightening us with any facts on Greg Inglis by having the audacity of only drawing his information from Wikipedia. And with the rumours running high of him being struck off from the podcast players group, we thought we'd give him one last chance. It's time for...
Salary Cap.
Yes, it's the game you all want to play. It's Salary Cap with your host, Sam Sankey.
Well, a jingle with no swearing in it will wonders never cease. Bloody
right,
hell.
Dennis, add swearing next week.
Why have you not used the one I sent you?
Caveat warning. I do not know actually what any player is on at Warrington. But it's good fun. But it's good fun to guess, isn't it? Salary cap. 2.1 million quid for your entire squad.
Is that before tax or after?
Neither. 2.1
million. Can I just ask a question
quid.
Here?
Ask away.
Has that salary cap in the years it's been in place actually increased in the amount that we've... And how much did it start from and to?
Not by much. It was 1.8 million to begin with. It's now at 2.1, which isn't a lot, but you've got lots of complicated extras. So you've got your two marquee players. So your marquee players only count at 150,000.
Is that with tax or no tax?
Oh, for fuck's sake. I can see a theme developing here already.
What's the VAT on that?
20%.
Hey, listen, you've been made redundant. Shut up. You don't need to know all these things now.
Yeah. So you've got dispensation there. You've got up to 100,000 for producing your own players. You've got player welfare.
And Sam, that 100,000, is that...
No, it's not.
Okay.
And you can actually win your prize money. You can actually put on top that doesn't count to the cap. But to cut a long story short, because I'm rambling on already, 2.1 million, if you divide it by the 30 players that Warrington Wolves website says they've got in their squad, it's 70 grand each. But we don't do that, do we? So I've got some guess who's on what. Ooh. You've got two marquee players.
Are we guessing?
Yeah, you can. Your two marquee players, you don't need to guess. They're Blake Austin and Gareth Widdop.
Yep.
Or at least that's what the club have said. So they count as 150 grand each. So there's 300 grand. Doesn't matter what we're paying them. There's 300
well,
grand.
Why are we talking about it then?
No, they still cost 300,000 towards it.
Oh, okay.
Was your cap. We could be paying them 600 grand in total, but they only count 300.
Now, that's an interesting point, and I think that's something that we should be clear on. So, no matter what they pay them, it still counts as 150,000 per marquee player.
Correct. So then, if you're putting a squad together, I'm looking at it like this. You've probably got six players who will be on between 100 and 150 grand. So 125 grand each to average it out. There's 750 grand. You've probably got five players on around about 80. So you've got five.
Just on that. So you said before that the salary cap was 1.8, right?
No, originally it was 1.8. And when it's 2.1 million now.
Yeah, but when it was originally 1.8, were there any marquee players?
No.
So it's exactly the same, because you take your 300,000 off your 2.1 and you're left with 1.8.
No, it's not. No, you can spend significantly more money now, depending on who you've got. So Luther Burrell.
Right, so basically...
it costs any money.
Right, so it's all these little
sorts of... They've played around the edges, yes.
Right, okay. But the actual substance of the 1.8 hasn't changed from the 2.1.
No, it's 2.1. It was 1.8 total, now it's 2.1 total.
Yeah.
Plus your edges. So if you say you've got six players, you can guess who they might be in the squad on between 100 and 150, so 125 each. There's 750 grand. You've got five players on around about 80. There's 400 grand. Maybe five players on around about 50 or 60 grand each. There's another 300 grand, which leaves you 12 players to share 360 grand. So there's roughly 30 grand each. So if you look at your squad, you've got your players like Nathan Roebuck, Josh Hewless, you've got Riley Dean. They're all going to be on a pittance. But it's who of your other players are on your 50, 60, 70 grand, and which six or seven at the most again, over 100 grand. And I suppose it's all about balance, isn't it? Philbin has just signed a new contract. He was probably worth his weight in gold last year because he was paying buttons for a top player. But probably now he's on top money. You've got Ben Curry, who we gave a huge contract to. Don't know what, but we gave him a huge contract. And then he spent the best part of 2 years on and off the operating table.
So, you know, when we bring someone like Greg Inglis in, does that mean that, you know, as a result of that, there's going to be some, suffering for the players at the bottom end of that scale then, because you've got to accommodate him?
Well, there's got to be, haven't there? There's got to be. So we talked about second rowers. Let's assume, because we don't know, but we assume Ben Murdoch-Masella and Ben Curry would both be in that level one bracket. So they'll both be on over 100 grand. Let's say of 350 for the two of them. That pays for Greg Inglis. But Greg Inglis into second rower. So who steps into the breach? Have we got someone already on the books, like Philbin did, who can step up and fill that void?
I suppose also it really exposes the depth of your academy system and stuff like that, doesn't it? Because you have to start relying on that with these.
Oh, 100%. So is Lewis Johnson and Ellis Robson and another lad I've been told is outstanding but not quite at first team level yet, Connor Wrench.
Dennis, have you noticed over the last few weeks he keeps mentioning this Connor Wrench? This is going to be his once Ben Curry goes, this is going to be his new picture on the wall. Connor Wrench. Yeah. Watch this.
I've not seen him in person, but I'm told he is a standout.
I bought a strap wrench yesterday to take a bit of plumbing apart. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Disappointed with it, to be fair.
Have we got a new section coming called Sam's Toolbox? Ooh. Is that what's happening?
I'll write that down.
What
do you think the average wage of what the average wage is in Warrington? This is on the government.
It's in Warrington.
Government stats.
£26,000. Right, okay, yeah.
There you go. Okay. So actually then, at 30 grand, playing a sport you love, isn't a bad place to start, you know, if you're a young, up-and-coming career sort of thing,
but
is it?
I would suggest that someone like Riley Dean isn't even on that. I would suggest they're only on 21, 22 grand.
Well, he's still 8,000 more than the average teaching assistant gets in Warrington, who is on £13,000.
How are you comparing that?
They only work term time, though. They're only working 39 weeks a year. Mind you, you could argue that a rugby player is only playing 28 weeks a year.
So what I want to talk about on the salary cap is, firstly, a £300,000 increase in the salary cap is hardly an increase that, you know, for a sport that is looking to sort of like grow, you know, and like, you know, correct, get more things.
But it hasn't been increased, has it? Because that extra 300,000 is for your marquee players. And you couldn't have signed those marquee players prior to having that loophole because they wouldn't have come. So it really is the same.
Yeah, I'd agree with you, Rob. It's broadly the same money, isn't it?
I mean, can you say broadly again? I like the way you said that. Then say
broadly,
rolls his
R's. Broadly,
it's like when Dennis gets an erection with Desi Drummond. That was a bit like that.
So, but the other point on salary cap. Yeah, the other point on the salary cap, and because of this, like, you know, really poor performance in terms of growing the salary cap and you know, and getting the game bigger. Rob, you mentioned this week about the TV audience and the BBC compared to the NRL.
Yeah.
You know, interesting that, you know, when you look at our approach to sort of getting a new TV deal, this, that and the other, there's two sort of probably sides to this argument in the fact that, one, you want to sort of just go for the money, which is there, it's in front of you with Sky. And then the other part is that, you know, you look at the audience figures and growing the game in a different way, drawing sponsorship in and growing that audience with the BBC. I think you mentioned that it was 7 million for the BBC watching Challenge Cup compared to the NRL.
It's ridiculous in terms of how much we undersell ourselves in the UK when it comes to sponsorship and advertising. Through marketing execs, they should be promoting it more based on those figures. It's all about eye views. That's what it's about when it comes down to selling social media and marketing through TV rights. And as you said, the NRL this week is bragging that they've got 4.1 or whatever it was, million people watching 9 games of NRL. It was the best stats they've had in nearly 10 years. Yet 5 games of Challenge Cup Rugby League on the BBC, this is 2017 because the BBC have stopped giving the stats now, was 7.1 million. You know, it's huge, right, difference.
And that's something, though, that cricket has found. As you know, I like my cricket. And Australia, with the Big Bash, went back to free-to-air because they got less money from the TV companies, but the viewing figures were massive. Crowds came into the grounds and now participation is up. It's a big gamble because you either take the guaranteed money from the satellite companies or you take the gamble of exposure.
I like to... Exactly, Sam. I think the NRL is fur coat and no knickers. That's the way that I would use it. It's all made as this wonderful sport that's progressing all the time. But having lived here for 20 years and seeing how that this economy is driven by the fact that we've got the biggest gambling problem in the world. You know, each year, it's a staggering amount of money that the Australians give back to the taxpayer in gambling. And then on top of that, you've got the NRL, you've got Melbourne, who have, I think, 250 million in debt in Melbourne. They rave about Melbourne being this wonderful team down in Victoria, but they're being bankrolled by News Corp.
Isn't that because, as Ando told us last week, he spent it all on the salary cap in those 10 years.
Exactly.
But is you're right with what you say, but when you look at their salary cap, your salary cap over there is $9.5 million, which is about 5 million quid, isn't it?
Yeah.
£5 million compared to 2.1 million.
The other thing that has really been devastating in this country, and this has really come to prominence in the last few years. And I remember arriving off the boat 20 years ago in Australia and Australian TV was absolutely dog shit. They virtually made no programs themselves. There was a little bit of creativity on the ABC, but they were just streaming it all in from the US, and they had programs like George and Mildred on TV, and Are You Being Served, for crying out loud? We didn't have Alan Partridge or all this kind of Big Train. That didn't exist.
It's influenced your soundbite, so hasn't it?
It was all this rubbish. So you sit down to watch Australian television, which is just absolutely flooded. The general attention span in Australia is 7 minutes, and they base that on the fact that the premise was there's an advert every 7 minutes in Australia in comparison to every 14 minutes in the UK. So you've suddenly got this mentality that no one really wants to sort of focus on what's on the box. And the only thing that ever really run high on the viewing figures was rugby league on a Friday night and cricket. And the reason being, there's fuck all else to watch on Australian television. You've now got a generation that's come through where the internet's come along, and Australia are the biggest downloaders, illegal downloaders, on the computers than any other nation in the world.
Following a trend.
Because they've now suddenly got the ability that the gates have been opened. And rather than having to watch Channel 7 or Channel 9 or Channel 10, the world's opened up so they can watch anything they want. So their audiences are falling over because you don't have to watch Manly play Penrith on a Friday night anymore. You can download from the US. You can watch UK programs. It's been taken away. It's been absolutely taken away.
So if the NRL is fur coat and no knickers, what is Super League and the RFL in a fashion?
I would say we're sort of a lab assistant with glasses on and a hair pinned up.
Is that Super League? Or
that's
is that
Super
the
League. And all we need to do is get her to the Christmas party and get a few drinks inside her.
I was going to say, is she a sexy? Is it a she and a sexy lab assistant, or is it more like Beaker off the Muppets?
Dear. <Good. laughs> Well, I'm glad we've covered that, lads. That was a really good section. So we'll do that again next week to see. Was that pointless? Actually, talking about Pointless, did anyone see Elston and Rimmer on Pointless this week?
Congratulations, you've seen off all the competition and you've won our coveted Pointless trophy.
Oh, that's a lot lovelier by a mantelpiece. What do you think, Robert?
Money. Money.
It's not just about the money, Robert.
At the end of today's show, the jackpot is standing at £3,000.
Oh, that's just brilliant. What do you think, Robert?
Substantial uplift in value.
Oh, yes.
I'm really pleased that extra cash is always valuable in sport.
I thought you'd like that. But we'll have to share it. Last
time, right the way through this time. So great to have you here, finally. What would you like to see come up in this last round?
Difficult question coming on. As I said before...
Get on with it, Robert.
But the one thing I want tonight is a golden point.
Null point. Yeah, time for null point.
I would like farm animals.
Farm animals, oh, that would be good. Black and white dairy.
Yes, cows, okay. That'd be great.
Well, let's see what today's choices look like. We have got 1970s rock lyrics, World War II films, gardening, pioneering teams in rugby.
We're rugby league.
Hang on a minute, Robert. What about gardening? I used to make loads of money clearing leaves from gardens. I was literally raking it in.
We're rugby league.
Okay.
Thanks, Alex.
Okay, very best of luck. Here are your three questions here. We're looking for any of the following, please. We're looking for any of the 22 founding clubs of the rugby league founded in 1895.
Hell.
Any of the 22 clubs that founded that.
Oh, dear.
We're looking for any of the 11 founding clubs of the Welsh Rugby Union founded in 1881.
Dear.
Or we're looking for any team who played in either the 1991 or 1994 Women's Rugby World.
Oh, shit.
So founding members of the Rugby League, founding clubs of Welsh Rugby Union and teams in the 91-94 Women's Rugby World Cups. Very best of luck.
Okay, now you've got a minute to come up with three answers. Only one has to be pointless for you to win. Just focus on whichever subject you like there. You don't have to answer all three. Are you ready?
No.
Yeah.
Okay, there is your minute. Your time starts
Liverpool
now.
Liverpool and Merseyside and beyond. Barnsley and Wakefield. Royston. Toronto. Castleford and some Wigan. Barnsley.
Stop saying Barnsley. What about Paris?
Royston.
You mean Paramaribo?
It was Warrington and Leeds.
I'm not so sure, Robert. Let's pick someone halfway.
I'm afraid
like, something
your time
like
up,
Rochdale.
So if you could give me your three answers, that would be great.
Paris. Paramaribo. What's wrong with that? I thought that was a good one.
You're living in cloud cuckoo land.
I assure you, I live in a mobile home. It could be pointless. I'd say that was one of the best answers I've ever heard on this programme. It was the best, what's the word?
What about?
shit.
What does that supposed to be?
It's a slang word for feces, and by extension, anything or anyone of poor quality.
I do hear that quite a lot, the RFL, but I'm not just some dumb jockey, Alexander.
Let's say bum jockey.
Well, that's a bit unfair.
Shit.
Let's have your three answers.
So that'll be Paris, Paramaribo, and Rochdale, as Robert suggested.
Of those three, which is your best shot at a pointless answer, do you think?
Well, say Rochdale Hornets.
OK, so we put Paris, then.
Paramaribo.
Rochdale Hornets.
Yes, that was very hard.
Put you under that pressure.
I wasn't feeling the pressure, if I'm honest, Alex, because I think we'd done all our homework, we worked really hard.
Paris, let's see. Let's see what happens when we say Paris.
Oh, such a shame.
But anyway, phew.
Oh, it's not going well, Robert.
We're not good at this.
I'm confident in the next answer.
Paramaribo. Let's see if that's right. And if it is, let's see how many people said it.
Oh no. And I thought that was pointless. That is a surprise.
Bad luck. Bad luck.
Everybody would appreciate the common sense and the obvious reality of that situation.
Is it me?
It was a no-brainer.
Fair enough. You make a good case. It's pretty pointless me staying now, really, isn't it? I'll get off then. See you later.
The Rochdale Hornets. Last answer. Let's find out if it's pointless. If it is, it will win you £3,000. Let's see how many people said Rochdale Hornets.
See you next week, Robert.
It's right. That's the main thing. Your first answer was absolutely correct. Rochdale Hornets taking us down through the 20s into the teens, into single figures. We're still going down with the Rochdale Hornets. We're still going down. You've done it! Congratulations, Rochdale Hornets was a pointless answer, which means you go home with that jackpot of £3,000. Wonderful.
What's it going to do for next broadcast deal, next sponsorship deal? Still don't know, really.
Very good, Dennis.
Rochdale Hornets. Rochdale Hornets taking money.
Or as the BBC radio used to say when I used to listen to that back in the 80s, Rochdale Hornets. He never pronounced the H's, didn't he?
Wasn't it Manningham or something? Manningham?
Oh,
something
not like Man Meninger again.
Yeah, Man Meninger won the first ever Northern Union. Manningham?
Mandingo?
I'm going to, just a minute. You carry on, I'm going to Google.
Okay, well, let's get on to the Twitter vote. I forgot to put this out, lads. I'm sorry about it. So it's not had that many votes. I think we've had about 100 votes. With Dominic Cummings driving 50 miles to test his eyesight, which Super League referee do you believe has the best eyesight in Super League? We had four options, Benjamin Thaler, James Child, Robert Hicks, and Christopher Kendall. Where was your vote going there, Sam? Which one would you have gone for?
Christopher Kendall is the youngest, so should have the best eyesight.
You'd have gone for Chris Kendall. Dennis, who would you have gone for?
Well, I like Ben Thaler. I think we should get him on and have a chat about the heritage of coins. As Thaler is a minted coin from Germany in the 16th century. You know, he's the right person for tossing the coin. I'm just trying to work out what Thaler's turn of phrase would be. Going forward.
I thought Robert Hicks's eyesight was perfect at Wembley last year, wasn't it?
It was.
Well, I hate to say it, but bottom came James Child. He only got 11%. I don't think anyone's forgiven him for the Catalans-Warrington game of last year. Then it was very tight. Christopher Kendall on 27%, Robert Hicks on 30%. But the winner, in agreement with Dennis, was Benjamin Thaler with 32%. I thought that was a bit... I actually thought Chris Kendall would win. I thought he's the steadiest of the refs.
Yeah, what does the public know? What do the public know? Public don't know nothing.
All I can say is that this poll has spurred me on for another Tackle Bags idea next week. Thank you.
Oh, Christ. Oh, God.
Remain indoors. Remain indoors.
You are now listening to the Rugby League Emergency Broadcast System.
Welcome back to the Warrington Wolves Isolation News, reporting every week on what the players of the Warrington Wolves have been getting up to. Our supercomputer, Lottie, will analyse the web and social media activities each week and randomly select a player and isolation activity for the podcast to analyse. So, without further ado, Lottie, Let's pluck those dots from those wire clots. Well, the results are in. It's Toby King, and he's running with the law.
Well, there you have it. Last time our Instagram preacher was Brother Blako Flaky Blake. Dennis, it seems Tobias King is holding up the sandwich board in Fletcher Street this week. What do we have on him?
Well, it seems that young Tony has been... Tony. Sorry. Start that again.
Swiss Tony.
No, I'm thinking of Tony Barrow for some reason.
What you've got to know seems is like... making love to a beautiful woman is just like...
Well, I used to know a Tony. I'm going to digress.
Oh Christ! And, it's not like you.
Her name was Tony. What was that short for? Do you know?
Antonia.
Yeah, it must have been. And I used to love her for ages as an apprentice. And I actually, asked her out, and she was about 2 years older than me at the time. I was 19, and I said, "All right, I'll take you out then on my bike."
God, what a night this would have been.
Yeah, so I turned up with my Lambretta and a spare helmet and took her out to watch the Soup Dragons at Legends.
Oh.
And took her back, very cultured, really good dinghy. And I saw her the week later and she said, I was a bit boring, I didn't make a move. Anyway, I digress.
Didn't show her your third helmet.
Toby King, he's been out and about this week, isolating in London, and unfortunately has had a bit of running with the law, cycling around. He's got himself a ticket. Now, I don't know the ins and outs of this. I don't know the ins and outs of this. I mean, I don't really go to London a lot, but Rob, have you got anything for us on this?
Well, I would say, first of all, no hiding in Hyde Park for Toby for taking a right hiding of a fine. I think which is quite good, isn't it? I have looked into this a little bit. It does seem that there's a lot of fines being handed out in Hyde Park at the moment because people are not sticking to the paths when they're cycling through. The Lady Di Memorial Fountain has no accessible bicycle tracks. So possibly with him being king, he's a royalist and he was making his way to the Lady Di Memorial Fountain and Cuttercross Field. Cuttercross Field and picked up his 60 quid fine. There are signs up though in the park. A picture of a bike with a round white sign with a red border means no, you can't cycle here. But a picture of a bike on a blue round sign with a white circle means it's okay. Mm. Maybe he's colourblind.
Yeah, it could be, couldn't it?
Now, I don't think you can discriminate, but you can tell the difference, can you, between green and red? If you're colourblind. So that could be an issue next year.
Week.
That
could be
could be issued. It's a 60 quid fine. You have to comply with directions clearly set out by the park, unless you have evidence that someone's messed with the cycling permit signs erroneously or maliciously. So that's kind of where we're coming at. Sam, you've been to London a fair bit. Do you ever sort of put a little bit of money in a slot and get yourself a ride?
It doesn't cost me anything to get my rides in London. Well, it does, I suppose. It costs me a bit of wine and some dining and some posh restaurants, but I usually end up with a ride.
Dirty fucker.
It's time for a new section to the show. Well, I say new. We've just rebadged it. Yes, wait for it. It's time for... It's coming. Yes, here it is. Lockdown. I said lockdown. Yes, lockdown. Lockdown letters. Emails. Texts. Tweets. Twitches. MySpace. Bebo. Friends reunite. Those wankers that write on walls in toilets. You know the ones. Put little dicks on the walls with a sort of hole. It turns out to be a glory hole if you stick your cock through it. Not that I'd know that. Anyway, it's time for Lockdown Letters.
Yes, it's Lockdown Letters, everyone. We've had a few this week. No particular order. We've heard from
How many have we got?
I've just got the three. Just the three. Right. Sam's putting his hand up there. He's a little bit concerned.
I've had my first ever letter.
Should we do that in the middle?
Because I'll do that in the middle.
The first one's a complaint, unfortunately. Jim Vaseline's back. He's written in. he's written in again. Here we go. Jim Vaseline, why oh why didn't you press the Anderson interview a little further and question what Steve Broomhead had eaten to leave such an awful smell in Ando's toilet? I once ate a pie at Wilderspool one Sunday afternoon that combined with 3 pints of Greenalls led to me on the following Tuesday night, after a vigorous game of squash in a Texan bar, shitting myself in the deep end of Woolston Baths.
Oh, God.
I was still firing chocolate lasers through to the next day. So until you up your game about your piss poor attempts at interviewing, I'm boycotting the podcast. Did you ever play squash at Woolston, Dennis? Did you ever get on those squash courts around the back?
No, I wasn't. I was never really a squash person. Too busy doing other things. Actually, we used to have a soapbox derby around Woolston Baths.
A what?
I thought you were going to say dirt box.
That's in the pool.
After listening to Vaseline. Yeah, probably was.
Sam, come on, give us your letter then.
Well, yes, the first time I've ever been DM'd ever. I was quite excited. I've printed it out so I could, in big letters, so I can read it.
Who prints out an email in this day and age?
Yes, I do. Anyway, lockdown letter. For my first one. Hello, Sam. My name is Sinjin Hellier, and I live in Guernsey.
Sinjin.
St. John. Yes, Hellier. Oh. And I live in Guernsey, although I was brought up on Jersey. You may think it's strange that someone living in Guernsey supports a wire, but I put that down to my heritage. You see, I never knew my father. And all my mum will tell me that he was someone from the north of England. That she met one summer. She told me he often wore a yellow and blue t-shirt, but used to get very pedantic when I called it yellow. He insisted it was primrose. Anyway, he loved rugby league, and when I found out Warrington wore primrose and blue, I naturally had to follow the club, thinking it would somehow give me a connection to the father I never knew. After hearing last week's episode, when Rob London tracked down Steve Anderson from 2001, I wondered if you lads can put out an appeal for around the same time to find out where my dad is. I believe I've picked up some of his genes, as I'm 5'9" with brown hair and I'm left-handed. Thanks in advance for your help.
You see, this is why you never get your DNA out there. Dennis has said, never do a swab, lads. This is what all I can say. Well, clearly she's gone down the wrong path there. We can't help her. And probably we should edit out of the podcast, is my advice.
Actually, you know what? You actually always had a white t-shirt and leather jacket. So, you know, maybe not.
Happy days. Okay. This one's coming from behind the old iron curtain. Yeah, it's come in from Adrian Child Molestov. I grew up in Croatia. I grew up in Croatia. I was too worried about saying Child Molestov. I grew up in Croatia, so I was late to rugby league. I enjoy the sport.
Croatia.
Where I used to do a lot of crocheting. It reminds me of water polo I watched as a boy and my team, VK Dubrovnik. I think many water polo players would take to rugby league easily. Which rugby league players do you think would be able to play water polo? Also, please bear in mind the shallow end in water polo is 5'1". So please exclude Tyrone Roberts from your discussions. Who do you think, Dennis? Who do you think would be good at water polo at the Warrington Wolves?
That's a good question, isn't it? Who would take to water? Siti Akawala.
Oh, that's very good, Dennis. That's very good. Sam, you got anyone?
Well, on the same lines as Tyrone Roberts, you don't want Matty Russell there. He'd sink, wouldn't he? He won't be able to keep his head above 5'1".
Yeah, that's true. Ian Thorpe was the big swimmer over here. You know, tall, lanky lad. So I think probably Mike Wainwright would be the one to go for. You know, someone lean with big feet.
With his, and he used to wear a skull cap, so he'd be used to wearing the hat.
Who wrote that letter?
Adrian Chal Molestov. From Croatia,
and he's doing Croatia.
He croches in Croatia. That's very keen on Croatia.
Right, okay. Yeah. It's a weird coincidence, that, isn't it?
I mean, talking of crocheting, who do you think would be the best crocherer to go on holiday in Croatia?
Who would crochet best in Croatia?
Yes. No. Okay. Right. Okay.
Tony Barrow.
Last one. I'm not sure if it's a boy or a girl. I think it's a boy. Dixie Normus. With no rugby league to watch, and with the postponement of the start of county cricket season, I've turned to completing all those odd jobs I've been putting off. Following mending the fence and bracketing and attaching a tumble dryer to the wall, my attention's turned to a sink tap in the bathroom leaking from its base. My wife said it's the washer causing this, but I argued the leak from the base is clearly caused by the loose O-ring. After 20 minutes of trying to unscrew the fucking tap from the pipe connection, and with my wife in my ear, I lost it, throwing the spanner across the bathroom, which cracked the bidet, which I'd installed following my problems. To top it all off, the wife said, "See, if I just knew I'd called Chris Hill, we'd have been fine. Anyway, with the bidet out of action, my problem's back. And with the easing of social distancing, my wife's gone to live at her sister's. Enjoy the podcast, Dixie." Just on that problem for a second, bottom problems. What would your advice be, Dennis, to Dixie? And I'll pass it on.
It's probably just use something like a washing up liquid bottle filled with water.
And would you you just squirt it on a daily basis? I'll pass it on to Dixie.
Don't put the nozzle up the anus.
Don't put the nozzle up the anus. I won't put the nozzle up. Oh, sorry, Dixie won't put the nozzle up the anus. So, okay. Correct. All right, thanks for that. Cheers. Excellent. Okay, well, that's it for another week. Enjoy gathering in small groups, but remember to keep a 2 metre safe distance, or remember it this way. 2 metres is the exact same average gain from an Andrew G run during his playing career at Wilderspool. Until then, keep the lockdown letters coming into whatbevan@gmail.com. Tweet to whatbevan. Also, anyone that is partial to watching UFC in the pub with a flat roof guarded by an Alsatian, there's always Facebook. So as his labour-intensive spreadsheets come to an end for another week, with a pack-up of his primrose and blue pencil case, his red and green velvet cover back on his working away from home abacus, until next week, it's an equational goodbye from Sam.
All the best.
And two, with the laying down of tools, as the factory hooter sounds and the looms fall silent, it's an industrialist goodnight from Dennis's shop floor.
See ya!
I'm Rob London. I'm off to dust off my back catalogue of UB40 albums. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say?
We didn't mention fucking sausages, and I had all sorts here. I had bloody... What did he have? I had Joe Monaghan, a chipolata, or a dog dick. Desi, chorizo, packs of punch,
nurse,
hard casing, Riley, vice versa.
Kingston Town, the place I long to be. If I had your word, I would give it away just to see.